the number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
On the nighttime
now. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. I am Tony D, taking you through the night tonight. As the news came down today that Tiger Woods was not going to be in the PGA Championship next week at Baltusrol, I can't begin to tell you how unsurprising this was. This was something almost every one of you would have predicted. Tiger hadn't played in any majors leading up to this season at all. He hadn't, he looked terrible swinging a club at a charity event. And Tiger hadn't really shown any sort of progress coming off the back surgery. So the news today that Tiger Woods was not going to play in the PGA Championship came as a surprise to nobody. But I think there was something about the idea that where is Tiger heading now as he approaches, you know, his 40s and where his game is and where his dedication is. Sam Smith from NBA.com and Bulls.com, who we have on a lot, wrote a book called There Is No Next. And he's sort of the definitive Michael Jordan biographer, if you will. And sort of he wrote this book based on the concept that there is no next Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan stands alone. And there is no Tiger Woods. There's no next Tiger Woods. Now, the difference between the two athletes is really based on Michael Jordan is considered the greatest basketball player of all time, where I don't think people who know golf will say that about Tiger Woods, given that Jack Nicklaus's record is intact and looking to stay intact at 18 major championships. But nevertheless, there's going to be no other person in my lifetime and maybe even another lifetime that is going to be Tiger Woods. I don't know if that's a good thing for the sport. I don't know if it's a bad thing for the sport. But I do know that the time that Tiger Woods played golf and played it well and took it to another level was something I enjoyed tremendously. You would watch majors when Tiger would win by 10. You'd watch it when Tiger would win by 5. You'd watch them when Tiger would be in a playoff or Tiger would be in a duel. He brought so many different kinds of people to the sport. Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy are great. And they're great for the sport. But nobody else drew other people in. And when you're a sports league and you're trying to talk about ratings and product sales and interest in the game and covers of magazines and publicity, you know you're going to get your core. That's always going to be a given. And every sport has that. It's the way you transcend, and it's a way you grow outside the sport that can really define your legacy. We talked about this with Jeff Gordon, the fact that he wasn't on the stage for the Icon ESPYs. That's insane to me, because Gordon was similar to Tiger Woods in that vein. NASCAR was very niche. It had its rabid fan base. But then here comes Jeff Gordon, and they start getting on covers of magazines that they hadn't been on covers before. All of a sudden, there are more interests in the sport. Tracks were being built around the country, so there were new fans that were popping up, and they were identifying with this young kid who was driving this really cool, colorful car. Tiger Woods did the same thing in golf. People who didn't watch a single round of major championship golf back in the day before Tiger Woods, when Bob Tway won the PGA and Greg Norman won a couple of British Opens and Larry Mize won a Masters, all of a sudden we're looking at golf completely differently. My God, it's cool. Golf was not cool before Tiger Woods. I played in high school. It was the most nerdiest sport, that at least in our school it was, right? And then Tiger comes along and it becomes, man, you can dress great, you can look great, you can still work out. I had an uncle who had a cup of coffee on the PGA Tour, and believe me, that's not a big deal. He was in the 70s, and he didn't make it. But I used to talk to him for advice all the time, and all my friends would be going to the gym and lift weights. all the time. Every one of them. You know, we all joined the Y, and we were lifting weights. And you're in those teenage years where you start wanting to bulk up a little bit for the ladies and whatnot. You're a little insecure as a teenager. And so all my buddies were going to lift weights. And my uncle, again, who had a cup of coffee on the tour back in the 70s, told me as I was playing golf and playing in a couple of tournaments and whatnot as a teenager, oh, no, stay away from weights. Don't lift weights. Oh, no. That you need to stay away from that. Make you muscle bound. You'll lose your elasticity. You won't be able to keep the clubhead speed. No, stay away from weights. Do a little running, do a little exercise, but don't lift weights. Then Tiger came and Tiger was lifting weights. And that may have been why we're here today, talking about Tiger not participating in the PGA. If you look at the history of Tiger Woods' injuries, they are numerous. Not only are they numerous, they're odd. Golfers have back problems. Fred Couples dealt with them for years. Mickelson has had a few little tweaks and whatnot. He took up yoga and Pilates. David Duval had the same kind of thing. But nothing on the extreme like Tiger Woods. None of those guys missed a year of action because of back surgery. Tiger has been broken down so many times and rebuilt so many times. If you just look at a graph and see the injuries, it feels to me Tiger took weightlifting to such an extreme for the sport of golf. And that's why we're talking about the fact that his career may never be the same now at 40 years old. While we're watching Phil Mickelson compete in the British Open at 46 and Henrik Stenson winning a major at 40, we're looking at Tiger Woods, one of the greatest athletes that we've had in sports over the last 20 years. And we're saying to ourselves, he's done. He's never going to be the same again. This is just too much. And I wonder if that's the main reason for it. But nevertheless, Tiger looked good. He was attractive. He looked like no other golfer I had ever seen in terms of muscle build. He hit the ball a mile. He hit his irons accurately. He putted like a demon. He was the complete package. The great thing about Tiger Woods, though, and I think this will come down in his legacy, was Tiger was as good as people said he was going to be when he was a kid. And that's something that is so rare. That is something that is really rare. You know, the fact that Bryce Harper is like that is pretty cool. But Tiger Woods at the age of 5 was on the Mike Douglas show because he could hit a golf at 5, because he could hit a golf ball. At 3, I think he was getting notoriety for the way he could swing. And as he grew up and was playing in tournaments, and he was, you know, his father was raising him to be the most dominant golfer of all time. And Tiger was learning how to play, and Tiger was growing in his game and winning tournaments and whatnot. We've seen that act before in all sports. We've seen that where the kid burns out. He's not the same. He gets involved in drugs and alcohol. He never lives up to the potential. The list is endless of athletes that we've seen in high school, early college, that we thought were can't-miss superstars that ended up falling in the wayside to demons that they couldn't control. Well, before the demons got to Tiger on that night in November in 2009, Tiger fulfilled every single thing that people said about him from the age of 3. That this kid was going to dominate the sport. He was going to change the sport. His dad was seen as a lunatic, an absolute lunatic, in the 1996 golfer or person of the year for Sports Illustrated, when he said, my son is going to be bigger than, you know, messiahs and godlike people that we've had on this planet. That people would look to him for guidance and all that stuff. People thought he's crazy. He, the chosen one? What are you talking about? He plays golf. But Tiger could have had that kind of impact. Tiger could have been that person. He could have gone to world leaders and spoke to world leaders about issues, if he so choose. Because he was welcomed in every country. People wanted to get a taste of this kid. People wanted to get a glimpse of this kid everywhere he went around the world. So his father was not really that far off, because he was that sort of overriding figure. Now, before you say, yeah, but you know, the internet and all that stuff makes the world more smaller. Could Phil Mickelson do that? Could you envision Phil Mickelson in his 20s and 30s shaping the world? Because I can't. Very, very few athletes get to do that, and Tiger was on that list. And now, today, this non-surprising, could see it from 100 miles away, heck, you could see it from 1,000 miles away, that Tiger wasn't going to play in the PGA, sort of sit back and put it in perspective. Because when I got the news, I sort of said, wow, he missed all four majors. He didn't come back at all. He didn't even try to come back. He had back surgery over the winter, and he never came back this season. Even just for a quick round somewhere, where he was really comfortable. Baltusrol, maybe too difficult. Firestone, maybe. Memorial, maybe. Some of the courses that he knew he would play well, maybe, but he didn't. He couldn't. And I really don't want to see this guy's career come to an end, but I don't think it's ever going to be the same again. So while there will be no next Michael Jordan, there will be no next Tiger Woods. Coming up, college football could be changing a major rule next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, 800-777-2907. I'm Tony D, taking you through the night tonight as we're getting closer and closer to football season. Countdown to kickoff starts Monday here on this show. A team every single day all the way through to the start of the NFL season. We're going to open up the previews with the LA Rams, followed by the New York Jets. Go to our Facebook page, Tony D Radio Show, and you can find out the five teams that we'll have for next week. By the way, I'm also going to be next week at the PGA Championship at Baltusrol, which is up the road from my house in New Jersey. Guess what I got invited to today, by the way?
What's that?
All right, so I'm on the credential list, right? So right. I got credentialed. So naturally you get, Titleist is unveiling a new putter. Would you like to come check it out? Like, that's usually the case. But I haven't been getting a lot of those lately. And then today I finally got one that I'm really, really interested in. I got invited to attend a cocktail party Tuesday night with dinner. All right. I'm in if it's free food.
You're good now.
And it's a sit down dinner, which means somebody's going to serve me a meal. Like, it's not going to be some sloppy buffet that I normally get when I go to media events. Dinner and cocktail parties from 6 to 8 at some hotel down the road from the Baltusrol golf course. And it's sponsored by the event is Mercedes-Benz, and they're showcasing this brand new luxury golf cart they've invented. Like, this is going to be awesome. It goes it's all in a lithium battery, and it can go 50 miles on one charge.
Now, do you get one?
Oh, of course not.
No,
I don't even think I could drive.
You should just take the one then.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of hoping in the email that it would say, oh, by the way, and there'll be a drawing for a free, you have a chance to win a Mercedes-Benz golf cart, right, if you attend. This thing has got it's got its own GP. You know how courses come with GPS? Like, it's like, oh yeah, that's cool. It's got GPS. But now everybody's got a GPS in golf. Everybody's got a golf GPS now, but this comes with one in the cart automatically preloaded with all these courses. And my question is, how do you take it from course to course? You have to be a member at a club and be allowed to keep it at a club. You can't just drive it to the, I think I'll play, Spring Creek today and then drive it to Spring Creek. But Mercedes-Benz is unleashing this luxury golf cart. I got to go. So my wife said to me, are you going to go to that? And I said, yeah. She goes, oh, you should. She goes, you're going to have to dress up really nice. I go, no, honey. No, we media guys don't dress up nice for these things. We just show up. I'm going to be wearing my pants and a golf shirt. I'm not showing up in a tuxedo for a Mercedes-Benz party, but that should be fun anyway, to see at least a luxury golf cart. My God, this is like a first world problem, right? Oh, is your golf cart not living up to your high standards? Like, it's got a refrigerator on it and everything like that. A golf cart. Oh, this is going to be fun. All right, 800-777-2907. All right, so I saw this story and I said, I knew this day was coming. I just knew this day was coming. NCAA is starting to look into whether or not it should be banning kickoff returns. Now, the NFL is toyed with this idea. We're at least trying to make kickoffs more safe. They've moved it up, so we're getting a lot more touchbacks in the NFL. And, of course, you remember Greg Schiano's proposal when he was the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he said, teams would have the possession, and it would be like 4th and 15, and so you could punt or go for it. And so you score a touchdown, you'd get the ball, and 99% of the time you'd probably punt anyway because on a 4th and 15, but it would eliminate kickoffs in some sort of strategic way. It was wild, but still, Greg Schiano was on to something. We got to get rid of kickoffs in football now. More players are getting hurt on kick returns than any other play in the game. So the NCAA is starting to think about this process. Should we be eliminating kickoffs? Nick Saban, of all people, actually said, you know, the kids come first. So it doesn't look like it's getting the tremendous pushback that I thought I would get from college football coaches that are saying, that's ridiculous and stupid. And while players are getting injured, they can certainly get injured everywhere. Let's keep the kickoffs or at least try to alter them so that kids aren't getting killed, but we're not taking it out of the game. I'm thinking that in the next couple of years, you ain't seeing this in any of football. It's going to be done in high school. I don't know if they do it in Pop Warner. I don't have a kid in Pop Warner, so I don't know if they do. I'm sure they do. But none at the youth level, none at the high school level, none at the college, and I would assume the NFL would eventually phase it out. It doesn't have to. Like, once you reach the NFL, it doesn't have to follow suit with what the youth football is doing, but I would think it would eventually. Man, let's talk about this for a second. This would mean some of the more exciting plays that we have in sports, the kick return, would be gone. No more. Now, it wouldn't eliminate, like, the kick six, you know, where Auburn beat Alabama, because that was just a return on an attempted field goal. But still, Devin Hester made a career out of returning kicks or touchdowns, right? I mean, we've had some really exciting moments with this part of the sport. I agree with player safety. I want the game to be as safe as possible. My God, my kid plays it. Man, I'd love to eliminate some of these wild, full contact hits where a guy is running at full speed and another guy that's running at full speed. But I wonder if, you know what, something that's good on paper and then to actually implement it is another thing. It's like when you buy a house, right? And you get this mortgage rate and you're buying the house and it's a little over your head. And you go, oh God, the loan payment is right here. And all I got to do is sign it. And I'm going to get the house and it's going to be this a month for the next 30 years. And you just, on paper, it looks great. And then there's something that prevents you from actually putting your signature on that mortgage paper, on that loan document. Because you just, in the end, are like, I don't know, man. This is, we're never going back. We're gonna own this house the second I sign this thing. I don't know. I wonder if that's going to be the case with this, that the NCAA and the oversight committees that are looking into safety and whatnot are going to say, yeah, you know, our recommendation is we got to get rid of kickoffs. So we got to come up with a better way to transfer the ball after touchdowns and field goals and to open up, you know, the halves. We have to find a different way. And then so they come up with something and then they go, okay, let's implement this. And then at the last minute, they're like, oh, I don't know. I mean, do we really want to go down this rabbit hole? I mean, and I wonder if that's going to be the case. Let me just say this. I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, I'll believe it when I see it, to get rid of, kickoffs in football. But I think it's happening. I do think it's happening. I think in the end they'll do it. I do. I'll believe it when I see it, but if I had my chips on the table, yay or nay, on whether or not I'm going to see this in the next 5 years, I got to be honest with you, I'm putting it on yay, especially if you're not getting pushback. And coaches are in an awful position on this anyway. What is Nick Saban going to do? Say, oh, no, you know, hey, kickoffs are an integral part of what we do at Alabama, and the fact that kids get hurt is really no concern of my part. I'm just trying to win national championships here. And if kickoffs are hurting kids, well, that's their problem. I mean, what is a coach supposed to do with that? I mean, he's not going to say that, but you know what I mean. I don't know. This could be really interesting. What's next? Well, don't go down that slippery slope either and say tackling. I know what you were thinking. I know you're thinking, oh, they'll just ban tackling and it'll be two-hand touch. No, I don't think it'll get to that point. But I'm telling you, if kickoff returns get out, punt returns are not long, all right? Not long. And next thing you know, it's going to be, well, every wide receiver can't be touched until they catch the ball. and defensive backs, and you go, oh, God, this is just ridiculous. All right, coming up next, TJ Auclair is going to join us. We opened up the show with Tiger Woods. What does this actually mean? He's going to miss all four majors in 2016. Next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the nighttime Yahoo Sports Radio. As we've been talking about tonight, Tiger Woods is out of the PGA and he'll miss all four majors. While this isn't surprising news, there's some stuff that we'd like to unravel with this season with Tiger and his injury. So we bring in TJ Auclair, joins us from PGA.com to talk about not only this decision, but again, what it all means for one of the greatest athletes that we've seen in the last 10, 15 years. How are you, TJ?
I'm well, Tony. Thanks for having me.
And again, I said earlier, this isn't surprising, and I know that we kind of anticipated that he would miss it, but what does, when you look back and see where this injury is going, is there real concern here?
You know, Tony, I think there's a lot of concern. As we've seen over the course of Tiger's career, he always seems to come back a little too soon from injury and just makes things worse for himself. So two ways of looking at this one. One, is it so serious that we may never see Tiger play competitive golf again? Or two, is he realizing in his older age, getting wiser and smarter and realizing, you know, I really need to get this thing fixed before I come back to competitive golf? Being in the golf business, I'm certainly hoping that it's the latter and that we can finally see a happy and healthy Tiger Woods on the golf course come 2017. But, you know, it's a huge bummer to miss him for these four majors. It's the first time in his career that he's missed all four majors in the season. So, he's missed out there for sure, but hopefully it's because he's focusing on getting back healthier than ever.
Knowing that Tiger Woods is very competitive, when you hear that he's not going to be in the PGA, is it more, I can't play or I can't play competitively and I'd rather come back at something that is a little bit more on the lower level?
Yeah, you know, Tony, he's never really shied away from that. I mean, we've seen Tiger make his return so many times at the Masters coming back from injury where he's had success. I mean, Augusta National is just the perfect course for him. So he's had top tens after long layoffs. I think Baltusrol might be a little bit of a surprise because when the PGA was last held there in 2005, Tiger tied for fourth. So it's a course that he's had success on. So I do think maybe last year he may have gotten a little bit spooked by those chipping yips that we saw when he came back. And I just think the caliber player that he is, he doesn't want to be talked about as somebody who just kind of faded away into oblivion. You know, he's been the number one player longer than anybody in the world, and he's had this extreme fall from grace both on and off the course, and I think now he just wants to get things right, and when he comes back, he wants to be able to compete. I'm not sure he's ever going to be able to compete like he once did. I mean, you look at Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson now, and the talent is just so deep these days, but I do think he wants to come back and be a factor when he does come back.
I saw a graph of all of Tiger's injuries over his career, and I thought, my God, this is like a football player. He seems to have broken down on every level. It seems odd for a golfer, but I know he had a strong workout routine. When you guys who cover the sport sort of sit back and analyze his injuries, is there a common thread? Is there something that he did that he probably shouldn't have done to lead to these injuries?
Well, you know, I'm certainly no fitness expert, except when you do look at Tiger Woods and his training regimen, it's always been that of a football player pretty much. All the weight that he puts up, we ask ourselves, you know, is that necessary for the game of golf? You look at somebody like John Daly and his body type, he doesn't seem to have any of the injuries that Tiger's had, and Tiger just looks like an athletic freak. So I do think a lot of this has to do with Tiger's competitive nature. I think, you know, when somebody is as talented as Tiger is, he needs different kind of challenges off the course, and for him, those have been physical challenges where he really pushes himself and probably to extremes. Everything that you read about, whether it's training with Navy SEALs or, you know, the work that he does in the gym with all the weights, I certainly think that, you know, he's brought a lot of this stuff onto himself, and a lot of times it's because he's come back too early. So, you know, it's unfortunate because you look at a guy who's got 14 majors, second all-time to Jack Nicklaus, and you look at the tremendous career that he's had, but you still ask yourself, you know, what could have been without all these injuries?
I've seen stories where Tiger seems to be more enlightened as he's gotten older, that sort of he really cherishes time with his kids and maybe designing courses or whatever he's doing. Do you buy that maybe a little bit of the competitive juices are out of him and that he's sort of content with what he's done so far?
Absolutely. You know, I myself have become a father in the last 2 years, two young boys now, and it certainly changes you. It's not about you anymore. You know, it's about your children. And I think Tiger, you know, it's not about his golf anymore. He certainly wants to compete, but he just isn't interested in putting in the time that he once did and probably just doesn't have that time because of his commitments with his children. And I think that when you look at it that way, that's where his mind should be. You know, it should be focused on his family.
TJ Auclair joins us, PGA.com, on Tiger Woods. He's out of the PGA and basically putting some sort of year in perspective where he has not played at all. TJ, I'm wondering about a legacy here because he's the greatest golfer I've ever seen in my lifetime, and I still am amazed at some of the things he's been able to do in his career. But I wonder if Tiger wasn't so vocal early about wanting Jack's record and looking like he would obliterate it, if we view his legacy different now that it looks like he won't get it. If he had said, if he just didn't say anything like, I just want as many majors as I can, we'd still be in awe. Does the fact that he's failed to reach Jack lessen him a little bit?
I don't think it does. I mean, we see year in and year out how difficult it is to win these major championships. And to have 14 is just sensational. I mean, you look at Phil Mickelson, what he did on Sunday, 65 in the final round of a major championship. When you enter the final round down by one, if you tell somebody they're going to shoot 65, the next question probably is, how many strokes do you think you're going to win by? For Phil, it turns out he lost by three because Stenson shot 63. So, I mean, you know, Tiger, to do what he did over the length of time that he did it, is just amazing. And I was reading some stuff earlier today about Tiger's late father, Earl Woods, and how he said when all was said and done, his son would have 14 major championships. And, you know, he got that 14th in 2008, and I'm sure we expected to have a lot more since then. That just hasn't panned out. But do I think it hurts his legacy? You know, I really don't. I wish we could have seen more of Tiger Woods without the injuries, but 14 is a hell of a number for major championships.
And isn't it interesting? I wonder in terms of the scoring that we're seeing in these days and ages, almost as if his continued pursuit of Nicholas is almost undone by what he brought to the game. I mean, 20 under at a British Open. Well, that's possible because Tiger had set the bar years ago at St. Andrews. Is there some sort of correlation for what we're seeing today to exactly what Tiger had brought to the game back when he was dominating it?
He definitely raised the bar for everybody, Tony. You know, he just, the fitness regimen, again, we talked about how maybe it was a little too rigorous for Tiger, and he couldn't deal with that. But when you look at golfers today, I mean, they are athletes. You have this younger crop. You know, I mean, it was impressive, the British Open with Stenson and Henry and Phil, two older guys. But you look at the likes of Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, what they're doing in the gym with their nutrition. You know, they are athletes now. They're not just golfers, and that is because of Tiger Woods. They all tried to model their game, their fitness routine, everything after Tiger.
All right, TJ, I'll get you out with this question, and this is an overriding thought on Tiger Woods and where the game of golf is right now. It's one thing to appeal to the golf fan, to say we've got a group of young talent, and aren't they fun to watch? Well, the golf fan gets it. Does the sport still need Tiger to draw the outside eyeballs to it that he once brought in?
Yeah, there's no question that nobody in the game of golf has ever moved the needle the way that Tiger Woods does. And, you know, we see that all the time, whether it's running a website and seeing what the traffic's like when he plays versus when he doesn't play. And you're right, while it is nice to have this crop of young golfers who are playing so well, it doesn't compare to having that one dominant player doing what Tiger did. You know, last year, Jordan Spieth was sensational in the four majors, won two of them, had a chance to win all four. And, you know, people are giving him a hard time this year because he wasn't able to repeat that. When you look at Tiger Woods, I mean, there's a guy who has won 10 times in a season, five times in his career. That's 50 PGA Tour wins in just a, you know, five-year period. Not a five-year period, but you know what I'm saying, 10 wins in five different seasons, which is just amazing. It's unheard of. So there's no comparing to that. He's the most dominating player that we've ever seen in golf. And I definitely think the game has a lot more eyeballs when you have a dominant player like that rather than this parity. While it's great, it's amongst, you know, five or six players, but it just doesn't draw the same attention that it does when you have that one dominant player like we've had with Tiger for so long.
TJ Alclair again, PGA.com, joining us on Tiger Woods, who will not be at Baltusrol for the PGA Championship, missing all four majors for the first time in his career. TJ, great stuff. I really appreciate your time on this tonight. Thank you.
Tony, my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Woods and Big 12, make up your mind. That's next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Well, we're paying tribute to television icon Gary Marshall, who passed away on Tuesday night, at the age of 81. He created Happy Days, Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley, among others. I think The Odd Couple, he had a hand in that. A lot of movies. Gary Marshall is great. I always liked him. He would be in movies. You'd hear that voice, sort of, you know, and he was just comforting. His sister was Penny Marshall, who played Laverne, among others. She was in League of Their Own, and she's a acclaimed director. He passes away at the age of 81. Happy Days was one of my favorite shows when I was a kid. I loved Happy Days. And I know it's funny because it doesn't really hold up today. If you're a big television watcher, Happy Days, when you watch it, and it comes on in reruns like on MyTV or Nick at Night or whatever it was, and you'd watch it and you realize, boy, this is a simplistic show. This is not a complicated show at all. It's a sitcom, but it just is flat. It doesn't have really complicated characters. It doesn't have complicated story arcs. There weren't, you know, big moments of confusion with the characters and whatnot. It was just really simple, and it was fun. Like, for example, if you go get a TV guide from the 1970s and early 80s, if you got a TV guide and you opened it up to Tuesday night's ABC, Happy Days would be on at 8 p.m. Eastern. The caption, the description of Happy Days might read something like, Fonzie loses his cool when his jacket is stolen from Arnold's. And that would be the half-hour show. And that's it. So his jacket's gone. Fonzie can't punch the jukebox. The girls don't come to him. That would be the whole episode of Fonzie trying to find his jacket because he lost his cool. Now, if you juxtapose that to Friends in the 90s, if you were to grab a TV guide and open that up and you would find Friends, it would say something like Ross is disturbed when Rachel sleeps with his best friend, or Joey has women problems when he sleeps with two girls from the gym. And stuff like compare that to the Happy Days episode where a half an hour was spent on Fonzie losing his cool because his jacket was stolen. Like that was Gary Marshall comedies back then. They were really fun. They were crazy, but they were fun. And he created one of the more iconic television characters of all time in the Fonz. Of course, with Henry Winkler's help, he becomes one of the more beloved television characters of all time. In fact, I don't know if it's still there, but I think Fonzie's jacket is still in the Smithsonian Museum as one of the, along with Archie Bunker's chair. So Gary Marshall. Gary Marshall was in, you have kids, Adam. Have they ever seen the cartoon Chicken Little?
I don't think so. The Disney cartoon?
Yeah, Gary Marshall plays he's the voice of the dad in that. Gary, and he had that really unique voice, like that New York, I can't believe it. You don't, you know, just that sort of, and every time I would hear that, I'd laugh. He was always funny. He was really, really funny. Gary Marshall, passing away at the age of 81. 800-777-2907. And later tonight, we'll talk about Mork and Mindy and Laverne and Shirley and stuff like that as we kind of pay homage to a television icon. God, I love those shows. I remember being a kid. I watch them today, and I do it for nostalgic sake, but I was glued to my TV in the early 80s as a kid on Tuesday nights. Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley. I couldn't stay up for Three's Company or Too Close for Comfort. And for good reason, I guess. Three's Company was a little racy for a seven-year-old. But Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, at least I could watch that. But other than that, I had to go to bed at 9. All right, we were talking earlier about Tiger Woods, and thanks to TJ Alclair from PGA.com to sort of put in some perspective this season. I hope he comes back. I really do. I don't know what we're going to get from Tiger down the road. It gives me hope, for example, when I see Mickelson, shoot a 65 in the final round of a major and be really in contention, being in an epic duel at 46 years old, that Tiger, with some real dedication to his game and some real time to get those skills sharpened up, that we could see him in competition in British Opens and maybe PGAs. I think when you're in your 40s, it's harder to win the U.S. Open. I think as you get older, you sort of need that youthfulness. Doesn't mean you can't. We've seen older, you know, Harold Irwin won a U.S. Open in his 40s. Jack Nicklaus won it in his 40s. But it's, if you're a betting guy, you wouldn't say the U.S. Open is something where you could get that done at that age. I think the Masters is a golf course that Phil and Tiger and guys who play that consistently well for years and years and years, I think they would be factors. It would not surprise me if Phil Mickelson won a Masters in his 50s. Not at all. If Tiger gets his game sharp, I think he'd be in contention at Augusta for years and years as well. But the British Open is where it's at. It's a golf course where if you play that particular style, it's a golf tournament, I should say. If you play that particular style, be able to take spin off the ball, learn to throttle it back a little bit, really crisp with your short game, really crisp with your irons. You don't have to blast at 300 yards. In fact, blasting at 300 yards is where you can often get in trouble. I think that's where those guys could stay in contention and win more majors as the ages start to creep in. We saw Tom Watson in 2009 at 59 he was on the 72nd hole with a chance to win the British Open at 59 years old. So you can win that tournament in your upper 40s and 50s. So that's why I'm never going to rule Tiger out. Because at Tiger at 41, he may need a year of just missing cuts and playing terrible, but getting his groove back. And then at 42, he might be able to notch a couple of these majors down. I don't know. I mean, the competition is still sharp from the youthful side. But as you saw in these last couple of majors, those guys were nowhere to be seen. Right? I mean, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Jason Day at the British Open, I didn't see him. Rory McIlroy made a late charge, but he was nowhere near the top of the leaderboard of being in the same field as Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson. He finished fourth at like 4 under. He was 16 shots off the lead. So, Tiger, I hope he can get back. Coming up next, the coolest college football coach is still cool, and the top 5 player storylines in the NFL next hour.